I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. You are listening to the sounds of my old neighborhood, East New York, Brooklyn. Today, as we begin broadcasting in my hometown on WNYC, it seemed like the perfect opportunity for me to come home and meet up with an old friend. We're at Woodhaven, which will turn into Conduit, which is when it turns into Conduit, we'll be in Brooklyn. We'll pass my house, actually. We'll pass my house. That's where I live. That's where I grew up, right there.
Yeah, Wyndham Plaza.
It was one of those mixed income developments where, you know, my father, he worked for the city, so they wanted like people who had like stable incomes, and that was supposed to be the idea. Then there was a variety of rents based on what you earned.
Turn right on Berryman Street.
It's right there.
Arriving at address 447. On right.
Okay, I opened the door for you.
There's Leslie. She's right there. Hey, Leslie.
Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Good. Leslie Groves. Leslie and I share a strange and special history. We were both raised here in East New York. We went to elementary and junior high school together. And then, due to a weird series of events, too complicated to go into here, we both wound up going away to boarding school in New Hampshire. Now, Leslie is a nurse executive at Taunton State Hospital in Massachusetts, and she's come home this weekend to visit her family and to get her childhood home ready for sale. And I've come home to visit family and visit with Leslie. We're outside of her old house on Berryman Street, and I have to say it's hard to imagine anybody else living here other than Leslie and her family. This was always a special place for me. It seemed like there was always a pot of chicken and rice on the stove and a pitcher of her mom's special Kool-Aid concoction in the fridge, and Leslie's folks and everything. And I don't know, it's amazing to be back here. And can we go in?
Absolutely.
My brother had to disable the stove because my father got a little out of hand one day he fell asleep.
But this is all the original stuff.
Wow.
I was here, they never changed it. All the original cabinets, the whole nine yards.
And it's just so funny again because that pot to me seemed bottomless. It seemed like magical.
It was.
Do you know what I mean? It was like this magical pot where there was always more.
Yeah.
And it was the magical Kool-Aid that there was always more.
And she always made a big pot of rice and peas too on the weekend.
Right.
And that would never end because there was always 2 days worth of food.
Yes.
You know? So the food was like, it was never ending.
Yeah.
It was always.
And it's funny, I think I spent like years trying to find that taste again, that rice and peas. I could never find anybody who could make it the way she could make it. And I never had the, you know, we were so little, I mean, it never occurred to me to ask her
how to make it. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know, was it because you didn't ask adults things back in the day?
Well, one day when you and I are hanging out over a stove, I'll teach you how to make it.
You know, she taught you?
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
How to make it.
Thank goodness. At least
my brother's a little better at it now than I am.
But, really?
Yeah. But,
wow.
He sort of stepped into her shoes after she passed away.
Wow.
So he learned how to cook. Hence all the seasonings up there.
Oh, wow. That's great. How did your parents come to live in East New York? Do you know?
We lived in Bed-Stuy. We lived on Putnam Avenue. That house is still there. It's a, four-story brownstone owned by one of my mother's older sisters. Who the way it goes is that you come from another country and then you sponsor everybody that comes after you. So she and her oldest sister bought houses in Bed-Stuy. So when my mother came here,
from Costa Rica,
okay. And all of my Aunt Linda's siblings lived in that house and. My father had already lived in the Bronx with his godmother. And they knew each other when they were kids in Costa Rica. And then my father found out my mother was here. He tells me he dropped the girlfriend he had, and that was the end of that. Wrote my mother a letter. And the next thing you know, they started going out. They get married. And then probably when I'm about, I think maybe about 3 or 4, they finally have up enough money together to buy a house of their own. Because we were living in an apartment on a top floor, I remember. And my brother and I had to share a room. That's what I remember about it. But the whole house was filled with my family, so it wasn't like, you know.
See, I lived the same way when we were, and we weren't immigrants from anywhere except from, you know, the South, right? The American South, but we lived in the triple decker.
Yep.
My grandmother lived on the first floor, and my aunt and uncle lived on the third floor, and we lived in the middle.
Yeah.
It's the same deal. We were kind of, you know, crammed in there. But then they moved, my aunt and uncle moved to the Bronx with my grandmother, and then we were kind of on our own.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, you were saying.
So they got enough money to get a down payment, I guess, for this house. This was a new, brand new development. All the houses that look like this on the street were all brand new. There's a little bone of contention. My father's aunt wanted him to buy a house that he could rent out apartments and make money off of that. My mother wanted nothing to do with tenants. And they have been the only people ever to own this house.
And when did your mom pass away?
My mother died October 26, 2001.
And then your dad and your brother stayed on here, right?
Yeah.
Did your brother move back in to take care of him or to live with him and keep him
company?
My brother
originally started just coming over every day to keep him company, and my father couldn't boil water on a good day. You know, I mean, he was a kind of frightening in the kitchen, and he used to tell him to back away from the equipment because it wasn't a good idea. So my brother used to come over and cook for him, and but then as his illness progressed, my brother actually started spending more time here and started spending the night with him, and wound up actually living here with him for mm-hmm. quite a while.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm back in my hometown, East New York, Brooklyn, talking with one of my oldest friends, Leslie Groves. I remember, and I it's so interesting how, I'm just curious what it was like for you now, because at that age, I remember this house as being such a place of sanctuary. I don't know if you remember it this way, but I remember there was a point at which, you know, schools could be kind of rough, and it wasn't easy for us as good students always. And I remember your mom would pick us up mm-hmm. from school, mm-hmm. give us the summary of what had happened on the stories during the day, acting out all the voices, and we'd come over here after school. I don't remember how I got home after that. I live, what, like 5 minutes from here? Yeah. I don't remember. But I remember coming here. Did I come here every day after school?
I think so. I think she picked she picked me, you, I forget who else up, but after school, and I think we came here. I don't know how you got home from here.
Yeah, I don't. Did I take the bus? Did somebody? I don't remember, I remember being here just about every day.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Did you mind that I was in your house every day?
No, not even a little bit. Because, you know, I spent a lot of time the house was a little different for me because I had to live here. So I spent a lot of time in this house by myself. You know, because, you know, I had working parents, you know, and I had a brother who had extra after school stuff. So I wound up staying a lot of time by myself, you know, waiting for people to come home so I could go outside and play and that kind of stuff. So when I had people come over and actually stay with me, I liked it.
It's funny now because I wonder, I hope that I would be as gracious to my children's friends, now that I'm a mother, mm-hmm. as gracious to my children's friends as your mother was mm-hmm. to me and to our other little posse that hung out here.
Yeah.
And I have to wonder now, I feel sad that I never got a chance to thank her. Mm-hmm. And so I'm grateful I have a chance to thank you. Mm. But I just wonder what she thought about us. It's like, you know, there wasn't a literature for little girls that hung out together back then. There was no cheetah girls back then, you know? What did she think about all that?
I think that my mother liked, you know, I think she welcomed all of our friends. I mean, I think that she was as, you know, as you put it very nicely, as gracious with all of our friends, with my friends, my brother's friends, whoever wanted to come into her home because it was her home. And I think that she welcomed anybody that wanted to come here just, you know, to just sort of hang out and have a good time, feel welcome. She wouldn't turn anybody away. That's the way she was. You know, that's the way they both were.
Why do you think they were that way? I mean, you could see it where her having grown up with so many kids in her house would have just wanted it to be her family and just like that. I wonder why. They were both so, you know, your dad, I always remember him with a smile on his face. I'm sure he wasn't like that all the time, but mm-hmm. that's what I remember.
I think that they were happy, and I think that they had an experience of life where they were happy with their lives. And it's really kind of funny you asked me that question because I was just thinking about that before you all got here. I really have to believe it's because, you know, they had that mythical thing that people run around searching for. You know, they were happy. They were serene. You know, they were peaceful. You know, this was their life. You know, this is what they wanted. They wanted to be together. They wanted their kids to have a life that they didn't have. And they wanted to just work and do the best they could. That was it. Mm-hmm.
Classic, you know, taking it from a distance. Of course, growing up, this was just normal. You know, your mom was a nurse. Your dad, as I remember, was a tailor.
He was a clothing cutter.
And I remember that sometimes one of the reasons your mom always had food on the stove is because she would adjust her shifts, right? So that somebody would be home, or that she was constantly working different shifts.
She only worked nights? She worked the same shift. She worked 4 to 12.
4 to 12, that's right. She worked 4 to 12, which is how come she could pick us up from school.
Right.
Right.
So she still did all the house stuff, you know. You had to food shop, you had to clean your house, you had to cook dinner, you had to do all those things. So all those things were already done. You know, like the food was already ready by 10:30 in the morning, and then the house was already clean by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, because by 2 o'clock in the afternoon she had to start getting ready to go to work.
It was that classic immigrant success story. You know, you wouldn't describe it that way at the time, but they worked very hard to buy this house, to make their stake, and then so you and Conrad, your brother, could, you know, do what you wanted to do.
Right.
Was it, I mentioned earlier that you and I both went to boarding school, which is kind of the first step in having a very different life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that when you and I were growing up, I don't remember too many kids who went away to school, generally because you did something wrong, you know? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was this weird thing, but for us to go to boarding school, it was the way it was presented was, if you go to this place, then you're definitely going to college. That's kind of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Was it hard for them to let you go?
Yes, it was. It was hard for them to let me go, but I think that they also saw it as a road toward a better life. What my father and what he repeatedly said after that didn't count on was that I never came back. And he said that over and over again, that I, you know, he'd tell his friends all the time, she never came back. You know, that was the risk that he took. He understood that. And but, you know, he was sorry about that.
What about you?
I think I did the right thing. I think I did the right thing to keep going in the direction that I went in. I've come back to Brooklyn now. You know, it's overwhelming to me. There's too many people here. They, you know, no offense, it's a lovely place, but they live on top of each other, and it's just different for me now. I just don't necessarily feel like I could live here again. And I thought about it, you know, before we started selling this house. I thought about it. I thought about it'd be perfect. I'd come back, live in a house, fix it up. I mean, you know, I'm a nurse. I can get probably a job any place I want. I mean, it's not like I'd have to struggle to find work or anything like that, but it's so different for me now that I don't know that I could make the leap at this stage of the game, you know?
I know exactly what you mean. I know I went all through college and just assumed I was coming back to New York and never did. I worked in New York for 3 seasons when I first started in television. Never lived, always commuted, you know, had a place here, a place there, but never came back. And I feel like my family is not thrilled with that.
Yeah.
Why do you think we never came back?
I think it was hard from the start. I think that it was hard for me when I used to come back from boarding school. It was hard. It was hard because once I got used to Concord, New Hampshire, and once I got a relative sense of independence from my family, it was very hard for me to come back to being the daughter that they knew, because I wasn't that kid anymore. And, I mean, I went to nursing school in New York. I was here for 2 years. And, you know, and it was fun, you know, going out in Manhattan and doing it. But that's not how you live in New York, you know. And I couldn't live here. And so when I got an opportunity to go back to New England to start working, I took it.
My father told me this story years later, as you might imagine, that when he dropped me off at school for the first time, he stood in the parking lot for half an hour staring at the window and couldn't leave. And he said, you know, for me, I was like, bye, Daddy. You know, see you in Thanksgiving. And just, and literally I turned around and never looked back, and he kept waiting for me. And he said, and what he said to me, and this was, I was a grown woman when he told me this story. He said that had I looked back, he would have taken me home because he would have taken that as a sign, but I never looked back.
Right.
And now, of course, I see that as this metaphor. Never did.
Yeah.
So
I actually had a different experience. I followed my parents' car on foot all the way to the gate of the school from my dorm. And my father drove slow because I kept up with him, you know. But when they got to the gate, I stopped and they drove away.
You were homesick already? You didn't want to go?
No, I was homesick. When I went away to school, when I was in boarding school, I was homesick every weekend. I would call and say, come and get me. But they wouldn't do it. Because they thought, they knew that it was leading to something different. So they were committed not to have me not have this chance.
That is so hard.
Yeah.
That is really hard.
Yep.
And now another journey, you know, to let go of this place of so many memories after so many years.
Yep.
I don't know. When you think ahead to how you're going to feel maybe a year from now, how do you think you're going to feel 2 years from now?
I think that right now, probably, this is the most emotion probably today, this weekend, that I've had regarding this house and regarding letting it go. And I think I'll feel good because I don't like loose ends. I like things to close. And I kind of know that, you know, things need to move on, you know. Relationships change. People get older. Things happen. Life goes on. And this is part of that. And for me, it's a part of my life that will never go away completely. It'll just be another chapter kind of closed. And I really got a kind of a strong sense of that today.
It's funny being from a place that so many people are trying so hard to get to, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not quite sure what to make of that.
I don't know, but I just kind of, I kind of look at them and marvel. It's like, oh, well, you know, take my spot.
I'm so glad to have found you again.
It's good to see you too.
Leslie Groves, my dear, dear friend, the original Cheetah Girl. Leslie Groves is a nurse executive at Taunton State Hospital in Massachusetts. Friend, former classmate of yours truly. She was kind enough to let us visit her at her childhood home in East New York for one last time. Leslie, thank you so much.
Thank you.